The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Oh, folks, welcome in Sunday night, July 5th. I hope you had a great 4th of July weekend. The stars are out. We're going to start the show with a little Earth, Wind, and Fire. As soon as Brian gets the music going. Big sports weekend. Local product, Steven Matz.
Yes.
From the S section in Stony Brook, where I live.
Oh, yeah.
2-0 after today's shutout of the L.A. Dodgers. And he's a young star in New York. And in about a week, you'll see a bunch of current stars trotted out on the field. We got the Major League Baseball All-Star Game approaching, don't we, Mr. Sweeney?
Yes.
John Sweeney across from me. I am the Woz, Derek Woziak. You're with us for 2 hours on Sports Talk Radio. SportsTalk1240.com if you need to hook up on your computer. Phone number 631-888-8811 if you got to get on the dial. Talk some sports. We'll talk about future stars. Maybe in a half hour or so, we'll have a draft expert from Western Canada, Randy Gorman. From the Keens Hockey, chief scout of the WHL, Homer Moose Jaw.
Yeah. I am wearing a Long Island Ducks hoodie.
Yeah, let's get this out of the way. Go ahead.
And Derek is wearing Dave Kingman's jersey. Is that signed, that jersey? Because he showed
this jersey
me a
book is signed.
From 1977, the Mets yearbook from 77. Had an autograph in there from 76. It was looking good. Very delicate book.
You know why I brought that in, John? Because
that book is
All-Star baseball is all about the kids. And I don't understand. We can lower down that music as soon as you get a chance. I do not understand why they play this game for home field in the World Series.
It doesn't, yeah.
That is ridiculous.
That's the only reason why they have
it. That is ridiculous at best. Just leave it alone. It's for kids. Enjoy the game for what it's worth, seeing your favorite players on the field. Hopefully, if you voted for the right players, since everybody chimed in and voted for Kansas City, like they're the big red machine or something. What do we got? The big blue? The royal blue machine?
Yeah, but in a way, I'm kind of happy for them because they're a small market.
Yeah, well, the game's in Cincinnati, not Kansas City.
I know, but I'm just saying, but you get guys that, I mean, I know they were in the World Series last year and everything, but you get guys that are going to represent Kansas City, low market.
They're an excellent team.
Yeah, right? They're playing good.
World Series last year.
Yeah, that's right.
Lost to the Big Bad Giants.
Big Bad Giants.
And Madison Bumgarner, who got lit up yesterday, didn't he now?
No, he got lit up in the first, and then he settled down a little bit. Yes, but you're right. How about Steven Matz, the New York Mets Steven Matz, with a 0.88 ERA.
You got to
love
it. Plus,
another ribby today. The Mets should start him at first base every single
game.
You want
to do it on the bench?
Yes.
I just love the fact that he has had two great appearances on the mound, and he is here to stay.
Put him clean up. He's the only one hitting on that team. There's guys in the Long Island Ducks that hit better than the Mets, except for today with that explosion today. Other than that.
All right, so they announced the All-Star lineups for next week. In case anyone lives in a cave, the All-Star game is July 14th, I believe. Is that the date of the game?
Yeah.
All right. So in the American League, Salvador Perez will be behind the plate. Great catcher for the Royals. Miguel Cabrera, although he's on the DL now, first time in his career. I hope you don't have him on your fantasy team, Sweeney.
First time ever.
But he's out, but he does get the nod at first base. Someone will fill in for him. At second base, it'll be Jose Altuve. Good little shortstop out of Houston.
Very good.
Little speed, little pop in his bat. 200 hits plus per year, pretty much. Third base, Josh Donaldson from the high-powered Toronto Blue Jays. At shortstop, Alcides Escobar, another Kansas City Royal. In the outfield, none other than Mike Trout, who everybody cares about.
Right.
And then two Kansas City Royals, Lorenzo Cain and Alex Gordon. Gold glove type out in the left field.
Right.
And the DH is none other than the Redemption, Mr. Redemption himself, Nelson Cruz, from suspended PEDs to smacking homers with Baltimore to a big fat contract out in Seattle as Robbie Cano fails. Nelson Cruz rises. He will be the starting DH.
He's still smacking homers out there, and they
of course.
It's hard to hit out there.
So not everyone that does PEDs is hated because a lot of people like Nelson Cruz. I like him.
Yeah.
Nobody dislikes him the way they dislike A-Rod, right?
No.
All right.
But what about A-Rod now?
Who cares about A-Rod? Let's finish the National League. That's the American League starters. The National League, we have a catcher, your favorite, Buster Posey.
Buster.
Even though we know Yadier Molina is better defensively, Posey is a three-time champion, isn't he now?
I mean, that's very awesome.
Yadier Molina is, without question, a better defender.
Posey's got more.
Posey's a better hitter. He's a better hitter.
Hold on.
But he's not a better defender.
But hold on.
Yadier is one of the greatest defenders I've ever seen.
I will say this, though.
Go ahead.
Posey has caught more no-hitters on his team than Molina.
Oh, that's outstanding.
That tells you
what does that mean?
That means a lot.
Oh, stop.
What makes him that he's so good at?
Oh, I guess whoever caught Nolan Ryan back in the day must have been the greatest catcher ever.
Well, me.
You're an idiot. You're a jackass.
Posey's good, man. I'll take that guy, he's a great hitter.
But Yadier is one of the best defensive catchers of all time. I'll put him right up there with Pete Rose.
He's not
Pete Rose with Johnny Bench. Absolutely.
He's not hitting.
He's
right
one
now.
Of the best ever. Right up there with Johnny Bench and Pudge Rodriguez. Yadier Molina. Right there with those two.
Yeah.
He throws out like 50% of base runners. Come on, man. He's awesome.
This year he's not
hitting. He's awesome. Doesn't matter. He's never been a big time hitter. For average once in a while, a little pop in his bat.
He
had a big home run against the team from New York one year in the playoffs, I recall.
That's right.
To finish them off on the way to the World Series title. Didn't he now?
Yes.
At second base, Dee Gordon will start in the National League. At third base will be Todd Frazier.
Having a good year. A
lot of home runs for the Reds. So they get a local guy right in there
at
third base. Back in the day, back in 1976, it was Pete Rose starting at third base. Pete Rose will get to appear at the game.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some idiot will try and politic for him for the whole thing. But however, he will not be getting in this year, next year, or any year before any of us die.
Let's hope not.
He'll never get in. All right.
Because he's a cheater.
At shortstop, Johnny Peralta from St. Louis. The outfield will be the young stud power hitter who's finally come to the table with everything everyone thought he had. Bryce Harper, staying healthy and banging out home runs.
Having a great
one off your boy Bumgarner yesterday. Also, Matt Holliday will start in the outfield. And Mr. Giancarlo Stanton. Mr. Tape Measure Homer, or so they call him.
Is Holliday still in the DL? Oh, he's back by now.
I don't know.
I think he's still in the DL.
You know what it is? He's not on my fantasy team, so I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, well. I think he's been out for a while, but yeah.
Has he been out for a while? Because I thought I saw him play last time I saw the Cardinals on TV, but maybe I'm wrong.
He's been out, yeah.
And the only reason I skipped one position is because this guy has to be the best player in baseball overall, despite all the love for Trout, and rightfully so, or Bryce Harper, or anybody else you want to bring up, Miguel Cabrera, or Stanton. But at first base will be Paul Goldschmidt. But he plays out west, and nobody pays attention to him. But he is the only man with over 100 hits, over 55 runs scored, over 15 doubles, 20 or more homers, more than 65 ribbies, and he even has 15 stolen bases. And he's a fine fielding first baseman.
Very quiet.
So right now, my midseason MVP, despite his team not going anywhere, Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes.
So you agree with that?
Yes, 100%.
Of course you agree. Goldie, they call him.
Yeah. We just don't watch.
And he is
because
awesome,
his games start at 10 o'clock
at night. Well, if he plays the Mets, I'll watch, but I don't really, search the dial. And he's not on, MLB Network a lot.
At midnight, 12:30 at night, we're sleeping.
But they have MLB Tonight Live, so you see a lot of cut-ins to his games. You see enough highlights. Baseball, it's not like when we were kids, man.
And Goldschmidt has had a monster year. I think a year ago, 2 years ago, he got hurt. Every year he's had a monster year. Every year, the guy's a monster. But is he the best player in baseball? That's questionable.
I think right now he is this year. If I was going to pick an MVP for this season, for the first 3 months, I'd pick Goldschmidt. He's been everything.
Yeah.
He's done it all.
Yeah. You have to with his numbers right there, right?
Yeah, I think he's the best. Right now.
Yeah.
Is he the best player in baseball? Maybe not. But so far this year, performance-wise, he's
been
the best.
There's a lot of guys having.
The guy's
batting. Having a good year.
The guy's batting 349. I mean, that's pretty exceptional. Everyone's like, oh,
if he played,
Mark Teixeira is back in action. And yeah, Mark Teixeira is really doing well again in terms
back.
Of he's staying healthy and he's hitting for power. But the last 6 years, Mark Teixeira has not hit for average like he
I will
did
say this.
Before that.
And I agree
with that or not?
I do. I agree with you, but I will agree with you.
Don't tell me he's elite because he's
if
not.
If Goldschmidt was playing in the East Coast, he'd be all over the place.
Superstar.
Commercials, everything.
He'd have commercials like Bryce Harper.
Right.
But Trout gets the commercials, and he's out west. But he's such a young, full of flair star,
He came into it. Blazing.
He was just young and took the world by surprise. You know, rookie season.
Right. It's fantastic.
And I understand that, but this kid, Goldschmidt, man, he does it all. He really does.
There's a lot of good big stars, young stars coming up in the league, in baseball. Look, you got Harper, you got Trout.
Right.
You got Goldschmidt. There's a couple of guys up there. There's a couple other guys out there, too.
Well, what about the – well, let's hold off on the Mets for just a minute.
Yeah.
The reason why I brought this yearbook in is because like we talked about, it's All-Star time.
All-Star.
Next week. And my earliest recollection, since I always say that the All-Star game is for kids, is the 1976 All-Star game. So this is the Mets yearbook from 1977. Right, and I wanted to show you about Kingman. Now, what did I show you in the yearbook that it said? How far did Dave Kingman hit a home run against the Cubs?
600 feet.
600 feet.
It's like a Mickey Mantle shot.
Folks.
Yeah, 600 feet, and it's quietly. Right. You don't hear about this. Why is that?
Because his name's not Mickey Mantle. That's why you don't hear about it.
A Mickey Mantle shot. How many guys? You know, Giancarlo Stanton hits these monster home runs, 450.
Think about that for a second.
600 feet.
No, but
600.
Think about that for a second. On ESPN, anytime he hits a home run, 400 plus, they
breaking
do this that whole tape measure on the highlight. They measure it out, 484.
Right.
They tell you what power. And he does have tremendous power. But
He's great.
Kingman used to hit 500-foot homers
regularly.
On a regular basis, at least a couple times a year. And he hit a ball over 600 feet. Listen, I didn't tell anybody. I was only 7 years old. I didn't tell them to put that in the Met yearbook, but I do have physical proof of this.
I remember sitting out up in the nosebleed in the left field bleachers up there.
You know,
up in the top third tier up in the Che.
Right.
And Kingman hit a shot over the stadium. It was like a moonshot. It disappeared, came down into the pitching where the pitches are back.
Well, the back of the bullpen was a regular landing spot for his home runs, but and sometimes
went,
in the parking lot.
The thing went as high.
Maybe Ed Randall talked about seeing him hit off a bus in the parking lot. I was in a game one time. I saw him hit a pop-up in the infield. He hit the pop-up so high that the infielders couldn't even judge it coming down. And it just landed for a single. I've never seen that before in my life. That's the kind of stuff he did.
Yeah.
He hit the speakers in the Seattle Kingdome. He hit a ball through a vent in the Minneapolis, the Metrodome.
That disappeared, right?
He hit a ball completely out of Olympic Stadium in Montreal that they couldn't even tell if it was fair or foul. They had to draw the line up from the foul pole on the cement wall for future reference. I mean, the guy did things that nobody did, but his name wasn't Mickey Mantle or Homer Killebrew or anybody else, right? Because he was mean to a few reporters, so,
Sent a female reporter.
So he's a bad guy.
But he sent a female reporter a rat.
Who cares? Listen. Listen, Rich from Manhattan, right? He likes to be friends with everybody on Facebook. So he's friends with a guy. And this guy used to write for the Islanders, this guy Pat Calabria. So I forget what we were putting on his Facebook thing. It was something with a picture with Kingman. It might have been when they had the Midnight Massacre, when they traded Tom Seaver and then they traded Kingman the same night.
Yeah.
And I just put a comment about Kingman because he's my guy. And this guy, he used to write for Newsday. Maybe he met him. Maybe the guy wasn't nice to him. What do I know? But he said he was a jerk, major jerk, whatever. Whatever. Okay, so, what I want to know? I want to know what people think about Ray Rice. I want to know what they think about Ray Lewis, even.
Yeah.
All right? But what about Sheldon Richardson now? Him with the Jets.
Another blundering bonehead game suspended.
Everybody loved O.J. till a certain time, right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Sheldon Richardson screwed up.
Guys are constantly getting in fights, fighting with cops.
Yeah.
I've read about that stuff. Fighting with their wives. I never heard, Kingman, he wasn't a personable guy? You know who else wasn't personable? Another guy I love, Thurman Munson. He was a guy who kept to himself. I love how guys don't want the limelight. And then if they don't give the guy what he needs for his article, he's a jerk. He's a pain in the neck.
Right.
Right?
There's a lot of guys that
they all love Reggie. Right? They all loved Reggie because he never met a Mike he didn't fall in love with. Or even like a guy like Joe DiMaggio. Like, Joe DiMaggio was lousy to fans.
Yeah.
But he was great to the media because he knew what they were doing for him.
Yeah.
In terms of providing publicity for him. And he loved restaurant owners. Anybody who was giving him a free meal or something free. Watch this, that for an appearance. You name it. But he wasn't necessarily the greatest with fans. So give me a break. All right. So he sent the rat to a female reporter. All right. It wasn't a New York City subway rat. Okay. You ever see the Nutty Professor?
Yeah.
You ever see those cute little mice or rats they use for their lab testing?
Lab rats.
That's what he sent her. So it's like having a pet sent to you, right?
I guess you can look at it like that.
And they just tied a little note to the tail. It said, Susan is a rat. Well, she must have done. Listen, I'm not saying that he should have done that. I'll agree that he made an error in judgment in his decision making. However, she must have done something that warranted a response like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
we
like,
don't know that whole story.
If this is what happens, then I want to know what was done. I actually wrote this lady an email one time. I just wanted to know what happened that would provoke him to respond like that.
Did she get back to you?
No. She didn't tell me the story. So she was nice. I mean, I wasn't nasty to her, but I want to know what she
Who knows
did.
What the real story is?
I'm sure he wasn't happy with female reporters being in the locker room when he's trying to take a shower and stuff at the time.
To me, I wouldn't even think of doing something like that. But for him to put that in his head that he's going to go out and get
Must
go out to
though.
The pet store and get a rat that and buy
so
a
So because
rat
the media didn't like him, and you know the phrase, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah.
All right, so because the media didn't like him, they failed to promote him for what he was. And what he was, especially now that you look at this performance-enhancing era with all the steroids, he's probably the last true strongman in baseball. All natural. I mean, he was
lean,
as powerful as I ever
was
saw.
He 6'6", 6'5"?
Yeah, 6'6", 210.
Yeah.
But the power was like you couldn't even – it was just inside
he
him.
He got a hold of it.
He had what you call –
the sound of it coming off the bat.
He didn't have show muscle like Canseco. Or McGuire, the Bash Brothers, right? Or, yeah. Or Sosa when he bulked up. He didn't have show muscle. You know what he had? They call it go muscle. He had a lot of go muscle. You had that in the gym one day.
Yes.
You're a big power lifter.
Oh, one day?
You would, no, look
was
at
it
you.
One day?
You
or
no,
was it many days?
Many days.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sweeney, for those that know Sweeney, for those that don't even know him, once upon a time, John Sweeney could lift anything you put in front of him on a barbell, set of dumbbells, you name it. You had that lumberjack power.
Yes.
All right, so I brought this yearbook because this was the 77 Met yearbook. I wanted you to read the thing about the 600-foot home run that he hit.
Incredible.
But I also wanted to show you because it had the center pullout on the 76 All-Star game, which was in Philadelphia. That was the first All-Star game I ever saw. And the reason it means so much to me is because Dave Kingman started for the National League and Thurman Munson started for the American League. Those are my two favorite ball players from day one as a little kid, collecting ball cards and all that stuff, watching going to games with my uncle, my dad, you name it, right? So this was the year, and what reminded me of this is that everyone was rooting for all those Kansas City Royals. So in this particular year, though, there was a true machine. It was the Big Red Machine, and they warranted all the starters they had in the All-Star game because they won back-to-back World Series in 75 and in 1976. So I love the picture because in the infield, it's 3 out of 4 Reds, right?
Was it Morgan?
It's Steve Garvey at first,
and
then, like you said, Joe Morgan at second. Concepcion at shortstop.
Dave Concepcion.
And Pete Rose at third base. Mr. Versatility himself.
He played every position.
What a jerk for throwing away his Hall of Fame.
Most hits in
just
baseball.
Just because he had a gamble on everything. And then in the outfield, you had the Bull in left field, Greg Luzinski from Philly.
I remember that guy. Like it was just
Dave Kingman in right field, Sky King. And in center field, George Forster. And George Forster was the only man for all those young fellas out there, all those aspiring media moguls, and sports writers and radio talk show hosts, all you guys think you know so much about baseball that lived through A-Rod and his steroids and all these other ball players busting up home run records like Cruz and Sosa and McGuire and Barry Bonds. Once upon a time,
George.
And let's give that time frame 1965 until 1990. So for 25 years, only one man had 50 or more home runs in one season. And that was the starter in that All-Star game in center field, 1976, George Forster. He was the only guy to hit 50 or more in a 25-year period. That is exceptional.
I'll tell you what's
And all you could say was how you hated him when he came to the Mets.
Well, there you go. Because the year before he came to the Mets, he had 52 homers, and we were like,
he came later on. He came in the early 80s. He hit like 52 in like 77 this particular year.
Well, that year before, if you look it up, that year before, I remember he had 50 homers the year before he came to the Mets.
No.
Look it up.
I'll look it up, but I know I thought he only did it in 77, but I'll look it up.
He did it, and then he was a monster year, and then he came to the Mets and did nothing. I'm not saying he did that. Maybe he had 28 homers or something like that.
I thought he was going to provide tremendous protection for Kingman in the lineup, and he didn't. That was what was a little disappointing to me as a young guy, because he was such a stud ball player at the time with the Reds. And then, obviously, behind the plate, you had Pete. I keep saying Pete Rose because I'm so looking forward to guys calling it to defend that jerk in terms of the Hall of Fame. But behind the plate, Johnny Bench, legendary, arguably the greatest catcher ever.
He had a great team. He had a great team. Big Red Machine.
So they had 5 of the 8 position players.
That's insane. That's incredible.
Isn't that something else? That's great. Only Luzinski, Kingman, and Garvey started out. I don't know if Kansas City, I like Kansas City, good young team. Maybe they get back to another World Series. I don't know if they warranted that kind of treatment.
You know, when this was Rose. Second,
but this is what happens with the voting, right?
You get Rose, all right, look, he was the manager. He could have left the pitcher in there while he's gambling, first of all,
right,
on baseball. Okay. He came out and said he didn't do it for 10, 15 years or whatever.
Oh,
writes a book, and then he says, yeah, guess what? I gambled. I'm sorry. Forgive me like they forgave all the steroid abusers. But guess what? He could have left the pitcher in there. That, what he did, hurt us fans.
He's a jerk.
Watching the game. Hurt the all these fans. He could have said, you know what? So-and-so's in there pitching. He's letting up two or three runs. Let a few more in because I bet against my team today. How you like that?
Well, absolutely. See, that's the problem now that they got proof that he bet.
So guess what?
On baseball while
he's
managing.
He's banned for life in my eyes.
The most damning piece in that ESPN outside the
that's
lines.
That's worse than doing steroids.
You know what the most damning piece of evidence that they showed was the amount of money that he owed.
Yeah.
He owed like $400,000 or $500,000. Now, when you owe that kind of money to a crime family, well, guess what? When you got to pay up, and the only way out is to fix a game.
That's crazy, man.
Then you have to ensure that they're going to win. You have to ensure that they're going to win, and then you got to make sure nobody knows about this because that crime family is going to have to lay all their bets in other syndicate operations to make their money.
That's worse than steroids,
setup, right?
In my eyes.
So they're not going to let him bet on that game, period.
Right.
He just better make sure he loses.
He destroyed baseball. Coming back now.
What he did with this whole thing I saw a couple weeks ago
is he
finished it off for anybody who was looking to defend him anymore. Because even Mike Schmidt, his biggest advocate, was like, he was at wit's end. You could see in his face, he was like done, like he had to give up. And all he said was, the only thing I could hope for is that he didn't bet against his own team.
How do you know that?
Guess what?
You got to go back and look at every game.
No. You don't have, how do you know that? How about this?
No, you have to go back to every game.
Guess what, Mike Schmidt? He did bet against his own team because when you owe $400,000 or $500,000, there's only one way to way to pay that up.
Right.
He wasn't making that much money back then. And by the way, that was the only year that George Forster had 50 home runs. 1977.
What did he do before he came to the Mets?
He had 52 in 77. Then he led the league again the next year with 40 in 78. 79, he had 30. Then 25 and 22 in 80-81. He came to the Mets in 1982 in 151 games. You know how many homers he had? 13. That's horrible. Now, Dave Kingman was the first Met to win a home run title. That was the same year, 1982. Kingman won the home run title, but Forster just didn't provide any protection, so the Mets didn't get better. Still a bad team. George Bamberger, the manager, whatever.
What did Kingman win when that number was? How many homers did he have?
38, I want to say. 38 homers, and he has the record for the lowest batting average for a home run champion, which was that year, 1982. He batted 204.
I was going to say 203.
That's the lowest batting average for a home run.
He struck out ahead of home run.
That's right. All or nothing. Strong man in the circus. The next year with the Mets, Forster hit 28 home runs. Not bad.
No.
Respectable. 28 and 90. That was in 1983 when they acquired Keith Hernandez. And then in 84, he hit 24 homers, 86 ribbies. And in 85, his last full season with the Mets, he had 21 homers, 77 ribbies. And then in 86, you know, he was on the team for a while, and then they probably gave him a ring, but he was on the team, and then he was gone. They sent him to Chicago, and he wound up retiring with the White Sox, I guess. Well, maybe he went back to the Reds to retire.
I don't remember him leaving after what he did.
I remember him being off the team
before
the end of the season, because I remember he did not play in the postseason.
Yeah. I know he wasn't on that team, yeah, but I just don't remember him going to the White Sox, but maybe he did.
So that was my favorite year, man, the 76 All-Star game. And in the American League, obviously, Munson was catching because I was so excited to see
that
him.
That is a great book.
And Mark the Bird Fitrick.
I remember him.
Rookie sensation was on the mound. And look at the other Detroit guys starting.
The young guys wouldn't even know about
LaFleur could
names.
Run like the wind.
Yeah.
And Rusty Staub. What do they call him? Le Grand Orange?
Yeah.
Like your hat? Freddie Lynn out in center field.
Fred Lynn.
What did he win? Rookie of the Year MVP in 75, 1975? Yeah. George Brett, one of your all-time favorites at third base.
Still.
With Toby Harrah at short. And Bobby Grich at second when defense meant more than hitting for the middle infield.
That was the whole thing, yeah.
And Rod Carew.
The hit machine.
At first base. One of the best.
Pure hitters.
Pure hitters for average.
Yep.
And still, he was, what, 10, 11, 12 points behind Tony Gwynn. So that's some all-star team, right?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And that was played in Philadelphia, right?
Classic.
Centennial, right?
Looking at this book right here, looking at these old players, it puts a smile on my face. It reminds me when I was a kid.
The city of brotherly love, right? They celebrate the old
because stuff. It was different when we were kids.
Centennial celebration, whatever it was, right?
We worshiped these guys. Yeah. I grew up worshiping these guys. You know, like, oh God, look at this. You know, this
it was just so different, John, because I just saw a show. CNN did a thing. Tom Hanks produced these shows, and they did it on the 60s, and now they started doing shows on the 70s, like documentaries. And one of the episodes, they're about 45 to an hour long, was on TV in the 70s. You know, so they just point out the obvious initially, you know, how like you had a TV, you had CBS, NBC, ABC, and you had, what, PBS?
Yeah.
There was nothing else.
That's right.
I didn't even know HBO started in the early 70s. I thought it started like at the end of the 70s, like ESPN.
Yeah.
I knew ESPN just started, from history that they started in 1979. Right. But HBO, I thought it started in the late 70s also, but they said HBO actually started like in 1971 or 72 or something like that.
I can't believe that.
I'm like, holy cow.
Those illegal cable
boxes. And then by
boxes.
The early 80s, those illegal boxes.
Everyone got those illegal cable boxes. They put a bullet, sent a bullet through it, and it killed your box.
But when we only had the few stations, right, Monday Night Football meant so much.
Oh, yeah.
And Monday Night Baseball meant so much. Man, I remember countless Jet games were blacked out because they were so bad they couldn't even put them on TV. A lot of Jet games I didn't even get to see in the 70s, right?
Right, yeah.
But you clung to things that heightened your awareness of sports. That's why I always say, like, Sports Illustrated and collecting baseball cards meant so much.
Yeah, me too. I was, like, looking through my cards, stacks and stacks of cards I had. I was, like, so excited to get a player, especially one of my favorite players. I was also a Munson fan myself.
Oh, how could you not like Munson?
Oh,
that guy was
best.
Just a...
He was great.
He was like Pigpen, man. He was always dirty. I don't remember seeing him clean. And whenever there was a bench brawl, he was the first guy there.
Yeah.
Beating up Fisk, going after George Brett, you name it.
Yeah.
So.
I want to ask you a question about this now here. Jose Bautista.
Right.
The All-Star game.
Right.
Batista's fourth on the list now right now, okay? Does he get in?
What, home runs?
I'm assuming Batista's making the All-Star game.
Right.
Obviously. And, so is Adam Jones.
Well, the manager still have to pick their guys, right?
Yeah. But really, Bautista should have been up there in the top three.
No, it'll be based on stats when they go through and they fill out the rest of their roster. They just named the starters, I think, tonight.
Right.
They still got to name the pitchers and all that and the reserves. You know, see which teams don't have anybody on the All-Star team.
Torrey Hunter's having a good year. This is probably his last year, right? Was he 39, 40 years old?
Yeah, he's doing all right.
Yeah, he's having a good, decent year. Decent year up in Minnesota. Went back home.
Stanton's great, like you said before, Frazier hitting a lot of homers for the Reds, so they get at least one guy starting on their team. You know? Maybe someone else will make it. I don't know about that. Albert Pujols has had a good year so far for himself.
Pujols is having a great year.
Yeah. As far as the Yankees go, I could see Teixeira making it because the power numbers are there.
Yeah.
I really don't know if anybody else warrants going for. Maybe Brett Gardner, maybe. He's had a good year for them. But that's
Gardner's having a very good year.
I wouldn't put anybody from their pitching staff on there.
Well, that closer, that
the
guy,
Mets.
Miller.
How about the Mets? Would you put anybody from the Mets? Does anybody make it? You take a pitcher. Their closer. Maybe he's had a good year so far. Familiar, right?
Maybe. Well, you can't even throw Harvey.
What about
there?
DeGrom? Is DeGrom good enough to make it?
DeGrom.
Has he been good enough this year? You got to think about that.
I guess you could put DeGrom.
I'm going to give you some time. We'll take a break for the folks out there. We'll get a little music going. And we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll focus on future stars. We got a chief WHL scout on the line, on hold, Randy Gorman from McKean Sports out in Western Canada. After this, we'll talk about the young draft picks of the NHL. Talk in a few, folks, back after this.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. Or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out. Or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, welcome back. Now we're going to switch bases for a little while here and go over to the nice coolness of the NHL. They just had the draft last week. Season finished up. Everybody already knows the Blackhawks, 3 cups in 6 years. NHL draft last week. And it's a pleasure to welcome in Randy Gorman from McKean's Hockey, chief scout for the WHL. Randy, what's going on tonight?
How's it going, Randy?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
All right, so just so you know, Randy, my name's Derek Wozniak. I'm a big-time Ranger fan. My partner across the way, John Sweeney, is a tremendous Islander fan. And when I read up on you, I know you're a chief scout in the WHL out there. You live in Vancouver. Did you grow up a Vancouver Canucks fan or no?
Believe it or not, guys, I grew up in the east coast of Canada from Nova Scotia. I was a big Montreal Canadiens fan.
Wow. Oh, an old Habitant fan. And who was your favorite Canadian growing up, my man?
Guy Lafleur.
Wow. Guy Lafleur, all right. Went old school, number 10.
The Flower.
The Flower, yeah. Yeah. Big-time goal scorer in the early 70s. All right. Yeah. Well, my all-time favorite Ranger is Adam Graves. And Sweeney, who's your favorite Islander there?
Well, it was Bossy at one time.
Until he shunned you.
I'm going for Potvin. Yeah. Look, I love Johnny. Johnny Tavares is my man right now.
All right.
Got a man crush on that guy right now.
All right. So Johnny Tavares drafted a few years ago, and he is a bright young star in the NHL now, top three in the league. In terms of performance and year in and year out, he just leads his team. 2015 draft, Randy. In terms of the Rangers, let's start with them. This kid they took out of the WHL in Seattle, Ryan Gropp, why don't you start with him? Tell us about the Rangers and that pick.
Okay, Ryan Gropp, he largely was looked upon by a lot of people, which is quite unfair that he was in the shadow of Matt Barzal, which was the number one pick of the Islanders.
Okay.
Went 16th overall, but let's concentrate on Gropp right now.
Right.
I'll tell you, he's a big frame. He's a big frame. He's very skilled and talented. He's got a great wrist shot. He's got a quick release. I mean, he led Seattle. He really carried the mail, guys, when Matt Barzal went down with a knee injury. He led the team, and he had to because they were looking to him for offense, and he did produce. The problem with Ryan is he's got lots of talent, but some nights he doesn't show up, and he's got to be more consistent. He cannot play some nights on the perimeter. With his size, he's very capable of going to the net and going to the greasy areas and getting the goals that way. He's also very good along the half wall, and he's got, like I mentioned, a quick release shot, and he's very good through traffic, and he plays with great hockey sense and a great vision. So he's got all the potential to develop into another power forward for the Rangers. I expect they'll give him 2 or 3 years of player development. And, you know, look for this kid in the future because he's capable of a lot of things.
All right. Also in that in terms of the Rangers draft, they had a guy they took in the third round. I might not say his name right, but he comes out of the WHL also, out of Regina. Sergei Borovitsky?
Zabrowski, yeah.
All right.
He's a Russian kid. He came over. He's a big, lanky defenseman.
Right.
I mean, he plays with a lot of grit. He's not a typical Russian guy. This guy plays more like a Canadian guy back there.
Okay.
I mean, he was second amongst Regina defensemen this year. Only Colby Williams had better stats than he did. I mean, he's a stay-at-home defenseman, though. And he makes smart, simple plays. I mean, he doesn't try to force the play. Yeah, I mean, he has great patience with the puck. If somebody is pressuring him, he'll make the simple play off the board. He's not going to throw it through the gut. He's not going to give it up. He doesn't like giving up the puck. And usually his passes are tape to tape when he comes out of his own zone. I mean, when he gets a chance to shoot the puck, though, he has a great shot with great velocity when he's in the offensive zone. But he likes to stay at home. His gap space control in the defensive transition is very good. And if your listeners are wondering what the hell is he talking about with gap space control, what I'm talking about is when you're in transition, his judgment where as forwards are coming on him, he plays them very well. He doesn't let them get too far in front of him. He makes sure that he's got enough space that he can actually make the play on the defender. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about gap space.
Okay.
I mean, he always plays hard physical. I mean, that's his game. I mean, he uses his size and his strength to win puck battles, and he protects the puck so well. I mean, he has a mean streak, and he plays that way. And he's a guy that you can watch for in the next few years because he is going to develop, and he'll be given all kinds of time to develop, probably another year or two in the WHL, maybe a year in the AHL.
Okay, and we have a third guy out of the WHL the Rangers had taken. Also, in the fourth round, Brad Morrison from Prince George. Can you speak about him a little bit?
Really a breakout year for him. I mean, he played on a line with Jansen Harkins, who also was drafted in this past draft. And he's a guy that plays a very good two-way game. He likes to go in on the forecheck hard. He will go in, and he's very tenacious on the puck. Doesn't like to give it up. And he forechecks hard back defensively. And that's what I say. He plays an overall good two-way game. And I think the Rangers player personnel and coaches are really going to like this guy. He's a leader, too. And he's a guy that will go into the corner and come out with the puck. And he works that hard. And he's another guy that's going to be one to watch because he put up some pretty decent number guys in the WHL. And he was looked upon on that Prince George team beyond Jansen Harkins to add secondary scoring. He certainly did fit the bill this season.
All right, so, you know, listen, a lot of these draft picks, you never know. A lot of them don't work out too well. These three guys out of the WHL, is there one of those three that you see having the best chance down the line if you're looking, you know, 2-3 years down the line?
Well, I would say between the three that we've mentioned, I still like Ryan Groff, and I also like Zabrowski.
All right.
Right now, if you ask me – which three out of the three would be able to make the jump the earliest, I would say Zabrowski.
Okay, but let's say they all go back to – do you see all three guys going back to juniors? Let's say they go back to juniors. You know, they make the natural progression. Not everybody makes it at 19, 20, 21 years old. But down the line, you see Gropp as being the best option in terms of developing into a key core young player for the Rangers. Is that what you see going forward?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Because I think that he'll be quite the asset. They will take their time with him, but I mean, you have to light a fire under this guy, and I think he will be now that he's drafted by the Rangers. He's
right.
Going to be a lot more scrutinized by the scouting staff. They're going to be out here, and I'll see a lot of them this year because they're going to be watching him and other stars out here. But I think now that Barzal is back, I don't think Barzal is going to make the Islanders. I think he'll be back in junior.
Okay.
I think the two of them will be leading Seattle this year.
Yeah, I only asked you only because I heard you make reference to his lack of a work ethic or having to light a fire. So I just want to see what you would say about the three of them, you know, down the line. I'm not worried about the immediate future with the Rangers. Mm-hmm. The only other guy I wanted to ask you, and I'm only asking in reference to if you've talked to other scouts, maybe some European scouts. I don't study the draft. It's not like the NFL is here in the U.S. You know, if I lived in Canada and I was able to get all those games on TV all the time between the OHL, the Quebec Majors, and your league, the WHL, I'd be more familiar with the players like I am with NFL players. But NFL players come right into the NFL. So, you know, with whatever team you root for, you're following them coming right into camp, and most of the time they're just making the team no matter what. And then it just depends on what their progress is. But I did notice statistically there was one guy the Rangers drafted put up a lot of points. His name's Daniel Bernhardt. He's out of Sweden, though. Did you speak to anybody in terms of, like, when you converse with other scouts from other areas of the world or Canada? Have you heard a lot about this guy? Do you hear anything good about him?
Well, I can actually speak. I've spoken to a lot of Army team scouts, and I also speak a lot with NHL scouts. Yeah, he put up a lot of numbers. But, you know, the Rangers did draft two guys, right, from Sweden. And the other guy, I'm a little bit more impressed with Robin Kovacs.
Kovacs, okay.
I'll tell you a little bit about Kovacs. I mean, he was a top six forward.
Right.
Playing for ALK Sweden.
Right.
And he's capable of beating players one-on-one all the time because he's so super skilled with his stick handling. And he's smart with the puck. He opens up ice for other players. And that means going to draw defenders away. And he also draws penalties. I mean, he handles the puck so smoothly in all three zones, not just in the offensive zone. I mean, he utilizes his speed, and he's very capable.
Right.
He just has lots of energy. You know, and his defensive zone coverage, of course, needs work. Most of the players at this level need defensive work help before they can go to the next level. But, I mean, he also forechecks hard. He's a player, you know, it adds a lot of spunk and grit. Someone to watch in the future. If you want to flip a little bit, yes, I have some information still on Mr. Bernhardt. He put up the most points in his league. I think he was a player of the year over there, but he's another guy. The difference between him and Kovacs is that he has a little bit more potential as far as a player that will, you know, he's another guy that will, he's bigger and he'll go to the net with conviction. Some of these players, you know, you get the typical line. You guys have heard it all before. Does he play like a European or does he play like a North American? And I spoke to that a little bit earlier about some of the players. I would think Bernhardt he plays more of a North American style. He likes to get physical, and he likes to win the puck battles that way. And going down looking into the future, I see both of these players possibly cracking the Ranger lineup in a few years.
Okay. You know why I asked you about Bernhardt was because I was up at Rangers training camp this past week. They had their Rangers prospects camp, and I skated one of the days when they had their scrimmages. And I just noticed Bernhardt a little more than some of the other guys, even Kovacs. So I just figured I'd ask you about him. Last question we hit the Islanders, because this guy played in the WHL. Now the Rangers, let me tell you something. The guys I noticed the most in their prospects camp, one guy is a big-time, big, solid, huge defenseman, Ryan Graves, like 6'3", 6'4", 230. And the other guy was a goaltender, Brandon Halverson, who they drafted last year in the second round. And then he signed a contract. Now, Halverson, when I look at him, good young goalie coming up with the Rangers. You know, they're set between the pipes. They got a Hall of Fame goalie in there right now in Lundqvist. But he got hurt this past season. And Cam Talbot had taken over for a while. And backing up him, this kid played a couple of games, Mackenzie Skapski, who came from Kootenay in the WHL. And recently he had hip surgery, so he's going to miss like 5-6 months. But can you speak about Skapski and your experience having followed him and tracked his progress when he was in juniors?
I had a chance to scout him for many years, and I can speak to that fact that, yeah, he's a big goaltender, and he covers the net rather well for his size. He's got great lateral movement both side to side. His glove hand is pretty good. He's worked a lot on that. He sees the puck well, guys, through traffic. And he goes down like a butterfly goalie, but, I mean, he's steady. He's very good at spotting the puck through traffic. The only problem is sometimes he doesn't come out enough to cut down angles, and I'm sure the Rangers goaltending coaches will be working on him both at the AHL level and at the pro level
right,
to make sure that he's able to be able to come out and do that, because sometimes he doesn't need to stay back on that much. He can come out and challenge, and that's what he should be doing more of. But he's a guy that was the top goaltender on his team when he was with Kootenay in the WHL.
Okay.
And I see bigger things from him in the future.
Have you spoken to anybody from the league that has followed his progress? Because he played in the minors, and then he came up with the Rangers when Lundqvist got hurt. Have you heard anything about Skapski as far as his therapy and his rehab with the hip surgery?
I haven't spoke to anybody about that or that much, but he was able, I think he was able to start practice and start back with weight training. That's the only thing I was told through talking to some scouts. So I think he is going to be ready, and I think he's going to be fully over that injury. But as you know, when you're coming back from an injury, it usually takes, you know, you're going to have, even if you're starting to work out back again, it usually takes a good six to 7 months
right
to get really back fully into the right training regimen so he's ready and gets back on the ice, and how he feels when he stretches and he has to move side to side is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, you know why I ask? Because especially with goalies, right, the hips and the groins, anytime they do some damage in those areas, you're a little concerned. All right, no, I appreciate that range info. We want to switch to the Islanders. My buddy John here, John Sweeney's going to take over. He's got a bunch of Islander questions for you.
Okay, first off, Griffin Reinhart. He wasn't this guy that the Islanders got, Matthew Barzal. I know they got him ranked really, really low. Like he was like the ninth in the draft, supposed to be going the ninth. The Islanders got him at the 16th. But would they just give up on Reinhart, or is this kid really that good?
I think it's not. I think they made a deal thinking that they have a good enough young defense within the Islanders, within their prospects in their organization, that they felt that they could deal Griffin Reinhart.
Well,
and the other second part of it, is Barzal that good? So they wanted to move up to get him. I absolutely believe so. And, you know, I talked enough about Ryan Gropp. Now I'll talk a little bit about Barzal and why they would have made that trade. The reason being is Barzal is a really super talented young center. And had he not hurt his knee in November, and it was rather unfortunate. I don't mean to be stumbling on my words here. He was horsing around in the dressing room with his teammates. The coaching staff and the management weren't too happy about it. But, I mean, had he not been injured, I really believe, guys, that he would have led his team in Seattle in scoring. He would have had probably 100 points.
Wow.
He finished second in scoring on his team, and he only played 44 games, so he missed about 28 games, and that's a lot in the WHL.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the reason the Islanders made that deal is they see what I've seen in him. I think he would have went higher, and I think the Islanders said, holy cow, he's there at 16. Let's see if we can move somebody to make this guy part of our organization, and that's exactly what they did. He is very super talented. He's a guy that can go through teams. He stick handles well. He draws defenders away. He can thread a needle with a puck. I mean, maybe not like Connor McDavid, but he'd be in the second tier. And had he not been injured, he would have been inside the top 10 pick, I think.
Wow.
Realistically.
So the Islanders made a Gauthier did a good move then. And what about the other guy they grabbed in the 28th spot? They moved up with Tampa. They made a deal. Anthony.
It's getting really loud here, guys. So you're going to have to speak a little louder for me.
They took another.
Sorry about that.
Anthony Beverier.
Beauvillier, whatever. He's a French guy from Quebec Majors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony, right.
Yes, Anthony Beauvillier.
How is it? What about him?
Yeah. Well, here's a guy that's actually he's a small guy. But, I mean, he was eighth in league scoring. I mean, but he is a face-off specialist. This guy, I'll tell you why. He won 58.7%. I did some research on him as well. He was second in the league in face-off.
Wow.
He's very fast, very quick on his skates. I mean, he's got great patience with the puck, and he holds on to it and before making the right decision. He's very dangerous off the half wall. He can play both center or left wing. And, I mean, he goes to the areas he has to. I've said that about other players, but I'm going to say that about him as well. I mean, he's always looking to score goals or set up other plays, and he has a quick-release wrist shot on the fly. So, I mean, you don't absolutely have to be the biggest guy to be effective. And with his frame, he uses his low center of gravity as far as getting up the ice quick, and he's really strong on his skates. So I'm really, I guess we say in stock market terms, I'm bullish on this guy. I think he's going to be something, and I think we'll have to wait and see what he has to put. Obviously, a little bit more weight on and fill out a little bit more. But I think he's another guy to watch for the Islanders in the future.
The Islanders got, like you said, the stock loaded with a lot of young talent coming up from drafting so low over the years. I want to switch just one thing up, and we'll get back to the analyst for a minute. But I just want to talk about Connor McDavid for a minute. In all the years have you done, have you seen anybody like him?
I hate to be like a broken record with other analysts, but I will say this. No, I haven't. I've been to World Juniors. I've been to the Ontario League and watched him play in his club team. He is a generational talent. And I hate to put so much pressure on his shoulders, but I don't foresee him not succeeding at the pro level. I really don't. Mm. I mean, if he doesn't bring the Edmonton Oilers into the playoffs this year, I'll be quite surprised.
Really?
Yeah, they have made a bunch of good moves, so they are looking to step it up, you know, big time as a franchise. So hopefully things go well for them.
Oh yeah, with the decisions they've made, I would think that they should. My hometown team, I hate to say it, that I live here with the Vancouver Canucks, I think they'll be the ones struggling to make the playoffs because everybody else out here in the West has made significant changes to their lineups. It might be a struggle for the Vancouver Canucks to make the playoffs.
No, I agree with you. Like with Edmonton, you look at some of the upgrades. They upgraded at GM first and foremost, right? They brought in Boston's old GM, Chiarelli, and they brought in a new coach from San Jose. Todd McClellan's had a very good career as a hockey coach. And then, like you said, they grab Connor McDavid. They have a number of top-level offensive talent that they've drafted in past years. My only big criticism of Edmonton has always been their failure to build up that defense and the goaltending, which they made the trade with the Rangers. They got Cam Talbot to compete, to be the starter, and they added a prospect on defense by grabbing the Islanders' former first-round pick. So, and they also signed, I think they signed Sakara, right? He finished up in L.A. last year, and now he's on Edmonton. So they have made a bunch of good moves. I think them and Buffalo both made a lot of good moves, right?
Well, I really like what Edmonton's done. And, and remember we talked earlier about the Griffin-Reinhardt trade?
Right.
That makes sense because I'll tell you why. The Edmonton Oilers own the junior team that Griffin-Reinhardt played for, the Edmonton Oil Kings.
Okay.
And they are quite familiar with his play. And they know what he's capable of.
Right.
And so for me, people ask me all in the business. I remember the day of the draft last week, I got about, 10, 12 different messages from scouts, other reporters, people that are in the know, and they're asked me, why did they make that deal? And I said, well, it makes sense because they know what they're getting. He plays for the team that the Edmonton Oilers own.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense.
But the Islanders gave up. But the Islanders, he was the fourth overall pick in the draft when the Islanders drafted him. That's the only reason why I was saying about.
They traded him to move up because they wanted to grab the other guy. I understand.
I know, but I'm saying, I guess he didn't pan out. That was a thing.
Yeah, obviously they wanted that. You could argue, was that too much? Maybe it was, but will Barzal make people forget about Griffin-Reinhardt in a few years? It's quite possible.
That's what you're hoping for, at least if you're an Islander fan, absolutely.
What do you think he's going to be? He'll be up there in like 2 or 3 years from now?
It's quite possible. He's another guy that his knee, I think now that he's had time to rehabilitate it, I suspect him and Gropp will dominate.
Right.
With the Seattle Thunderbirds, and I don't believe they'll be playing in the NHL next year, but, they're not far away.
Right, they're 18 years old, these guys, right?
Yeah.
Now, I know.
Go ahead, guys.
No, go ahead. Finish what you were going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You have to give up something to get something, but I don't think they made, at this point, a bad move at all.
Right.
I think it's going to help both teams.
Yeah. And now, my partner is going to want to know about these guys also. A couple other WHL products the Islanders took. One was Parker Witherspoon from Tri-City.
Yes.
How's he look going forward for them?
Parker needs to work a little bit on his skating, I think. I mean, his older brother was drafted about 3 or 4 years ago, Tyler Witherspoon, by the Calgary Flames. He played on the Portland blue line. Parker's a different sort of type of player than his brother, but he he's got a booming shot. And he's huge, and he plays physical. He just has to improve his foot speed.
So more of a project.
Level, okay. Yeah, he's okay at the junior level.
Okay.
But, if you look at him, and I know, because I go to all different levels of hockey, including NHL games, and I don't see him, unless he improves his foot speed, I don't see him in a pro uniform right away.
Right.
That's something he can work on, and it's something that I think the coaching staff will work on him, because each level you go to, and I know the fans can appreciate this, is once you leave junior, when you go to the American League, the game is faster.
Yep, absolutely.
And so forth, when we get to the NHL, you have to make decisions in a more, astute manner, or else the other players are going to be on top of you like you would believe. So, yes, I that's the only thing I think he needs to work on, because he's a mean, big muscled guy that really throws hard checks. Other players don't like to play against him because of that. And the only thing is, if you're a faster player, sometimes they do manage to get around them.
So he's got to work his feet.
Yeah.
He's got to work his feet in terms of, the Rangers had a problem with a guy they drafted a few years back in the first round, McElrath.
Dylan McElrath.
Yeah, and he big, strong kid, but still working to develop those feet, you know, and his movement laterally on the ice. Absolutely. I understand where you're coming from with that.
I remember being in L.A. for that draft.
Okay.
And a lot of the Ranger fan base were there, and I met a lot of them at L.A. Live. And then once they found out I did scouting, and they wanted to ask me about Western League guys, and I said, they asked me specifically, you know, about some of the guys, and this is before we knew that he was going to get drafted. And I told them a little bit about some of the bigger guys and, you know, the guys that play physical games in the WHL, and they asked me about Dylan. And I said, well, he's tough. You know, he's not afraid to drop the gloves.
Yep.
But again, he's another guy. His foot speed needs to be worked on. It still needs to be worked on.
Yep.
They're coming up on 5 years on him.
I know.
I would think that something has to develop soon with him.
You know what? And I was all in favor of them drafting him that year. I was looking for them to take him because the Rangers, quite honestly, they've been looking for a Jeff Bugaboom-type defenseman ever since he had to retire. And so far with Dylan, it hasn't worked out yet, but he's still in his early 20s. So, you know, we'll see what kind of progress he makes in this training camp. Now, I know you're familiar with the movie Animal House, right?
Yes.
All right, so legacies. Yep. We're talking about legacies now. My partner's going to want to know about, from Brandon in the WHL, Rich Pilon's nephew,
yeah,
Ryan Pilon. So tell us something good about him for my buddy here.
Okay, yeah. You're familiar with Rich Pilon, of course.
He's a legacy. You got to let him in, right?
Yeah, that's right. He's part of the bloodline. Part of the bloodline. I'll tell you a little bit about... what happened, he went to Brandon because he was originally drafted by the Lethbridge Hurricanes. And I guess things weren't going so well there, and the ship's finally been righted there in Lethbridge to get different ownership and different managerial personnel. So I guess he just wanted out of it at the time, got traded to Brandon, started to be coached by Kelly McCrimmon.
Right.
And he's really turned his game around. His attitude changed 360 degrees. He wasn't relied upon on the Brandon blue line at the beginning as you know, have to go do it all for everything. I think he settled back in more as the third and fourth, or the second pairing, a third or fourth type defenseman, not in your top two. And he's developed into quite a player. You know, he's a guy that's got a little bit of a nasty streak too. But the problem with, I find with Ryan is that sometimes he's another guy that he has to show up. He played much better, guys, in the second half second half of the season last year, and that really propped up his draft status. Beginning of the year, I've seen the same type of player, whether he's going to show up and play every night. But boy, did he turn it around the second half! He's got a booming shot. You know, he's improved his skating. His hockey sense is fairly good. Rarely is out of position, and really developed into a pretty good guy. And didn't hurt that he got a chance to play a little bit with another top defenseman with the Brandon V Kings who got drafted the first round, Ivan Provorov.
Provorov, yeah.
All right.
I got one more to ask you about the third round draft pick for the Islanders, Mitchell Sumpel. Sumpel from,
yes,
Oshawa. What about him? He's a little small.
He's a small guy, but. He's a small guy, but he developed in the second half a lot on his play. I mean, he's offensively gifted as a defenseman. You know what? He reminds me a lot. Do you remember back a few years back, the Kitchener Rangers had an offensive defenseman that was drafted by the Carolina Hurricanes by the name of Ryan Murphy? Remember him?
Okay, yeah. Yeah. All right.
Sure.
You remember him? Well,
yes.
He plays a lot like Ryan Murphy. He's pretty much all offense. He quarterbacks the power play. He's got an excellent shot, low through traffic. I mean, he's patience with the puck. The problem with him, like I said, and it was the same with Ryan Murphy, is they get caught out of position a little bit too much, and he has to pay more attention to the defense. He's like almost like a player that probably should play forward instead of defense. But he put up pretty good numbers. I mean, he's 63 points in 58 games.
Wow.
I mean, that's a lot
that's
of
pretty good
potential.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, he skates really well, too. He's just a, you know, for a smaller player, he put up pretty good numbers. But I think if you can rein him in defensively at the pro level, I mean, I think he can help. He reminds me, like I said, of Ryan Murphy. And there's another guy who plays with the the Calgary Flames. It was originally drafted by Columbus, and that was Chris Russell, who played in the WHL for the Medicine Hat Tigers. I mean, he's not the biggest guy either,
right?
But boy, did he ever develop! And look at it, he's now one of the top defensemen on the Calgary blue line now.
Yeah, he's pretty solid.
Right, yeah.
He stepped it up when Giordano went down for the
right.
year. So yeah, you're right about that. All right, listen,
yeah.
I hate to make the references with the movies, Randy, but did you ever see the movie 16 Candles?
Yes, I have.
All right, so you remember Long Duk Dong?
Yes.
All right, so we have to ask you about Long Duk Dong making it to the NHL, yeah. The first Chinese hockey player.
Yes.
And Dong Song. Do you know, can you give us any info on him?
That's quite a story, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the Islanders should, at the prospect game, the Islanders should play clips from the movie.
Did the Islanders just draft him because they're moving to Brooklyn? And was that more of a publicity? Or is this kid pretty good?
Well, a little bit about him. He came over here, like I said, a good story. Came over here from Beijing. Grew up, his mother apparently tried to find him a different sport to play in China, but he was playing around the rink.
Okay.
So he just developed, put him on skates, and all of a sudden he really enjoyed skating, and they gave him a stick and a puck, and he started to play. They realized, of course, that there's not really much of an organized league in China as far as developing hockey players, so
right.
they moved him, they moved to Canada. They moved to in Ontario. I can't really define where, but it doesn't matter. He played some in Ontario. Then they decided to move to New Jersey. And I guess he played at a small high school in Lawrenceville, I believe it was.
Yeah, Lawrenceville he went to, I guess. Yeah, I don't know
yeah.
anything about him. I was aware when they drafted him, but that was about
right.
it.
And apparently he led his team there and is going to be going to Culver Academy.
Right. Yeah, he's going to be a long-term project without question.
Oh, yeah.
Without question, he will be. But, there's somebody that, if you want heart and desire and determination, I mean, here's somebody that fits the bill. He wants to play in the NHL. He wants to succeed. I remember a guy a couple of years ago that played right here locally in Vancouver and now plays regular on the Montreal Canadiens forward line by the name of Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah, Gallagher, what a little pest he is, man. He is excellent.
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of Kenny Linsman when he played.
Yeah.
But
not as dirty, but yeah, he's, I tell you, he's a tireless worker, gets under your skin, but you're right. You're right about him.
Another story, an adjunct story to that. His father is a strength and conditioning coach for the Vancouver Giants. Never pulled any punches, no special favors when he played on the team.
Right.
But his father told me, he says, everywhere he played, he was told, you're too small, you're never going to be able to make it, kid. You know, you can play, but you're never going to play pro.
Gallagher,
every
yeah.
Every level
right.
he went to, yeah, Gallagher I'm talking
right,
about.
Right, no, I got you.
Never going to play. Everybody said that to him. The kid said, I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to be on pucks. Like you wouldn't believe. I'm going to throw checks. I don't care if the guy is 5 or 6 inches taller than me. I'm going to go in, and I'm going to play that type of hockey. He did it throughout his career, right through junior with the Vancouver Giants of the WHL. Was drafted in the fifth round by the Montreal Canadiens, and I had him a lot higher. I don't want to bang my own drum, but, I mean, I didn't have him in the first round. I'm not going to take credit for that.
Right, I got
but,
you.
I mean, he was drafted in the fifth round. I had him probably going in the third round. Montreal got him in the fifth. And boy, were they all smiles when we had a conversation that a year or two afterwards. They said, Randy, I mean, this guy is just phenomenal. He never gives up. You know, in a playoff series a few years ago with the Boston Bruins, he would go in and he would actually try and take on big Zdeno Chara on the Boston Blue Line or Milan Lucic.
Yeah, no, he's a tough little guy.
Yeah.
He is. He's a tough little guy, but I look at Brad Marchand being more like a rat, like Ken Linsman. I can't stand Marchand. You know, Brendan Gallagher, it's like you like him except when you're playing against him. But Marchand you dislike all the time unless he's on your team. He's just...
I've been to a number of Seahawks games, and the fans in Seattle love him.
Right, okay.
All right, out of the seven players that the Islanders drafted this year, who do you think has the actual shot in the next couple of years to actually make the team and actually do something in the NHL out of those seven guys? Is it just?
Well, I got to go back to Matthew Barzell.
The first guy, yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But I was just wondering if he had another guy in mind.
All right.
Another guy?
No, I'm just saying that. I understand that.
Yeah, he's the main guy, but you're big on him. Do you still follow Montreal like you did when you were a youngster?
Yes.
All right. So you've enjoyed what you witnessed? How many Stanley Cups? At least six, right? Or did you see the ones in the early 70s also?
Well, I would be about 10 years old, but I seen the ones in the 70s too.
All right, so you enjoyed a lot of happiness there.
Yes.
Well,
you haven't seen it for 20-plus years now, so it's a lot different for you now, right?
It is huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
But you know what? The NHL has evolved. It's good for the markets everywhere.
Right.
I mean, I'm cheering for Montreal, but, you know, as a scout, I like to see all hockey markets do well.
Right, no, I got you.
When Tampa Bay beat them out, I wasn't too disappointed because it's good for hockey in Tampa Bay.
Right.
I actually didn't think Tampa Bay would get by the Rangers.
You know what? Neither did I. But they did a great job. They outworked them in the right spots. And unlike their inability to win on the road in the regular season, they certainly did it to the Rangers.
I was wearing.
You know, they won a big Game 5 and a big Game 7 at the Garden, shutting them out twice. And unacceptable for the Rangers, and certainly as a Ranger fan, it should have never happened. But you know what? I give Ben Bishop a ton of credit playing as banged up as he was with that groin. I give him a ton of credit.
Let me just give you a little props.
Absolutely. He was just immaculate.
Let me just give you a little props to your Canadian team here. I was watching the hot dog eating contest this weekend in Coney Island, Brooklyn, where the Islanders moved to, my beloved team, moved away from Long Island to go to Brooklyn, okay, where I live out here, okay? And they said most consecutive championships, this guy, Joey Chestnut's a hot dog eating champion for the last 8, 9 years or whatever it was, 8 years ago. And they went down the line and they put the Montreal Canadiens and they had him from 1950.
Would they win five in a row?
Five in a row.
Yeah.
But you would think that they would put the Islanders.
No way.
With four in a row, the forgotten Islanders
everybody
that nobody talks about.
Nobody cares.
That franchise back in the 80s, early 80s. Historic franchise. And they just like, they just, and it's in, they went to, it was in Brooklyn.
He's still distraught. It's good. I love seeing this.
It makes me sick.
Randy.
I just don't understand it. This whole thing of them moving very upsets me.
All right, Randy, you broke down the draft great for us with the Islanders and the Rangers. Before we let you go, can you please give the folks out there the website in case they want to sign up for the articles to read on all the guys you break down from all the leagues? Go ahead.
Okay, well, it would be www.mckeens.com. And that's all you have to do, and then it'll prompt you to if you want to go on to some subscription services too. We have our rankings during the regular season.
Right.
At the end of the year, I believe I've sent over to Robert Cole, who's one of your colleagues. I do send every year the draft guide to you guys, so you can see exactly the work we do.
Right. Okay.
Bring
excellent.
It together, and why we rank players where we do.
Perfect, and you're the chief scout for the WHL, and you did a great job
excellent.
Here tonight with all the players coming out of Western Canada.
I just want to say one thing, Randy. Hopefully in the next 3 years from now, Matthew Barzell will be scoring a hat-trick against those Rangers that are across from me, my buddy over here.
You know what?
I'll be jumping
I hope
up
so
and down
too.
For joy,
Randy,
going yes, yes, yes.
Randy, I hope his guy scores a hat-trick against the Rangers on the night that the Rangers raise the Stanley Cup banner. If they don't win one in the next few years with Lundqvist in net, I'm going to lose my mind.
Before you go, what'd you think of that trade? Because to me, it was giving up Cam Talbot.
Tell them what you think about the trade, Talbot.
Hold on. I just want to say this. The Rangers have historic problems with draft picks.
They stink drafting.
Yes. And they trade the guy that actually brought them to the President's Trophy.
They wanted
Cam
to
Talbot won 18, 19 games, whatever he won, when your king was out.
I understand.
Hurt,
yes.
Okay?
He's
and then
great.
They get three draft picks back from Edmonton, which they're horrible in drafting.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that.
But
they moved up in the second round, though.
I understand that. But, Randy, what do you think of that trade?
Well, as all trades go, guys, when I originally thought, I was thinking, I don't know, what happens when Lundqvist retires?
Thank you. Yeah. Or gets hurt.
But the way the minds work, and I don't work for the New York Rangers, but what I can say is I think I know why they did it. As they had a chance, they feel there's some goaltenders in their system, but they also felt, I looked at some of the depth charts of the Rangers as far as their prospects in their system, and they were a little bit short on the shelf as far as coming to some forwards.
Yep.
and maybe another defense or two. That's why they said, oh, we got a shot here getting three, you know, pretty good picks. It's just a deep draft, and that's the key to the trade right now. It's a deep draft. They wanted to get in on the second round, so they got those picks, and they knew they could get it for Cam Talbot, and that's why they did it. The proof will be in the pudding, because you could say, nah, it's a bad trade. You gave up a goaltender that played extremely well in absence of...
He did a great job, man. It was tough picking up for a Hall of Famer.
He did a great job.
He did.
They may want to cash in on that while they can. I can tell you one thing. They took the wind out of the sails of the Vancouver Canucks, because the Canucks at the time also wanted to move Eddie Lack.
Yes.
And they were talking to Edmonton. The Edmonton brass, they knew, and they thought in their minds, of course, that Cam Talbot is a better fit and played better. So that's why they made the trade.
You know what, Randy? I love Cam Talbot. I loved him as a backup 2 straight years. Perfect backup goalie. The best thing I could say about Cam Talbot is, and the thing that stood out to me more than anything that he did, he could give up a goal or two early in the game within the first 2 minutes, and he never loses his composure or confidence, and he just settles in, and that's it. You get nothing the rest of the night. And I think Edmonton made a good move. I would rather have kept him till maybe the next trade deadline and just took maybe one pick later, but that's just because I'm watching him as a fan, and I love the way and the temperament he has as a backup goalie. But when I see the prospects like Halvorsen, Brandon Halvorsen, they just signed him. He looks really good post to post. He's quick, good glove. And obviously we talked about Skapski. They've got some goalies in the system, so I understand the perspective you bring with needing forwards in the system and defensemen. So I agree with that. All right.
Yeah, I think each trade we'll know in 2 or 3 years whether or not if some of these guys develop and they're in the Ranger lineup, or how Cam Talbot does with the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
I know real quick, I know it's very early with this draft and everything, but is this one of the best drafts that you've seen in years to come with Eichel and Dylan Strome and Connor McDavid?
Is it worth?
Is it deep?
I think it's the best one since 2010.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Hey, listen, Randy, we want to thank you for spending all this time with us. We appreciate it. We'll get you back on during the season, maybe.
Let's go on.
And we'll talk hockey when the season's going on now, all right?
Good luck with the Canadiens this year.
Yeah, anytime you want me to come back to break down WHL or just prospects in general, or talk Rangers, Islanders, Devils, let me know.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, folks, we got 45 minutes to go, but before we get to phone calls and baseball and football, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.